Late in the evening I entered his study, after traversing an imposing but empty dining room very dimly lit. The house was silent. I was preceded by an elderly, grim Javanese servant, in a sort of livery of white jacket and yellow sarong, who, after throwing the door open, exclaimed low, "Oh, master!" and, stepping aside, vanished in a mysterious way, as though he had been a ghost only momentarily embodied for that particular service. Steen turned round with the chair, and in the same movement his spectacles seemed to get pushed up on his forehead. He welcomed me in his quiet and humorous voice. Only one corner of the vast room, the corner in which stood his writing desk, was strongly lighted by a shaded reading lamp, and the rest of the spacious apartment melted into shapeless gloom like a cavern. Narrow shelves filled with dark boxes of uniform shape and colour ran round the walls, not from floor to ceiling, but in a sombre belt about 4 feet broad. Catacombs of beetles. Wooden tablets were hung above at irregular intervals. The light reached one of them, and the word Coleoptera, written in gold letters, glittered mysteriously upon a vast dimness. The glass cases containing the collection of butterflies were ranged in 3 long rows upon slender-legged little tables. One of these cases had been removed from its place and stood on the desk, which was bestrewn with oblong slips of paper blackened with minute handwriting. "So you see me, so," he said. His hand hovered over the case, where a butterfly in solitary grandeur spread out dark bronze wings, 7 inches or more across, with exquisite white veinings and a gorgeous border of yellow spots. "Only one specimen like this they have in your London, and then, no more. To my small native town, this, my collection, I shall bequeath. Something of me, the best." He bent forward in the chair and gazed intently, his chin over the front of the case. I stood at his back. "Marvelous," he whispered, and seemed to forget my presence. His history was curious. He had been born in Bavaria, and when a youth of 22 had taken an active part in the revolutionary movement of 1848. Heavily compromised, he managed to make his escape, and at first found a refuge with a poor Republican watchmaker in Trieste. From there he made his way to Tripoli, with a stock of cheap watches to hawk about. Not a very great opening, truly, but it turned out lucky enough, because it was there he came upon a Dutch traveller. A rather famous man, I believe, but I don't remember his name. It was that naturalist who, engaging him as a sort of assistant, took him to the East. They travelled in the archipelago together and separately, collecting insects and birds, for 4 years or more. Then the naturalist went home, and Steen, having no home to go to, remained with an old trader he had come across in his journeys in the interior of Celebes, if Celebes may be said to have an interior. This old Scotsman, the only white man allowed to reside in the country at the time, was a privileged friend of the chief ruler of Wajo States, who was a woman. I often heard Steen relate how that chap, who was slightly paralysed on one side, had introduced him to the native court a short time before another stroke carried him off. He was a heavy man with a patriarchal white beard and of imposing stature. He came into the council hall where all the rajahs, panjarans, and headmen were assembled with the queen, and a fat, wrinkled woman, very free in her speech, Steen said, reclining on a high couch under a canopy. He dragged his leg, thumping with his stick, and grasped Steen's arm, leading him right up to the couch. "Look, queen, and you, rajahs, this is my son," he proclaimed in a stentorian voice. "I have traded with your fathers, and when I die he shall trade with you and your sons." By means of this simple formality, Steen inherited the Scotsman's privileged position and all his stock in trade, together with a fortified house on the banks of the only navigable river in the country. Shortly afterwards the old queen, who was so free in her speech, died, and the country became disturbed by various pretenders to the throne. Steen joined the party of a younger son, the one of whom 30 years later he never spoke otherwise but as "My poor Mohammed Bonzo." They both became the heroes of innumerable exploits. They had wonderful adventures, and once stood a siege in the Scotsman's house for a month, with only a score of followers against a whole army. I believe the natives talk of that war to this day. Meantime, it seems, Steen never failed to annex on his own account.